Hello, hello, hello. Welcome to the Shiny Happy People podcast. This is Vinay, your host. It's another guest episode today and an interesting interview coming up. But how's everybody doing out there? I hope you're all staying good. For all you new listeners coming in, welcome. For all our regulars out there, welcome back. Hey, drop us some feedback, will you? Share, subscribe, and let's build up our listenership. Make sure you recommend us to your friends and family. Okay, back to our guest. Today, we have a gentleman called Ben Renshaw. Ben Renshaw is a leadership thinker. His innovative work with leading organizations, senior executives, entrepreneurs has made him very popular in the world of coaching. He writes about how to lead and be successful in today's very volatile world. He's actually the author of 11 popular books. And his most recent book, which we're going to sort of deconstruct and go a little bit deeper into, is a book called How to Be a CEO. He is an executive coach and a leadership consultant. He's worked with a lot of CEOs from a variety of industries, companies, countries, etc. So he's in a well-positioned place to write a book about how to be a CEO. Let's hear more from Ben, what the book is all about and how he got to writing this book right after this break. Okay, folks, the moment is here. We have Ben Renshaw with us. Ben, welcome to the podcast.
Hey, fantastic to be here. Thank you for your time, Vinay.
Oh, brilliant, brilliant, brilliant. Ben, I'm going to dig a little bit deeper in a little while on your book, How to Be a CEO. What an awesome title. But before we get there, I'll ask you a existential question. Who is Ben Renshaw?
Oh, what a great question. I've been asking that question for many years. So in terms of the answer, there are a few dimensions to Ben Renshaw, but the essence of Ben Renshaw is connected with my own sense of purpose. And that quest and discovery for purpose has been a conscious journey for over 40 years. So, you know, I grew up very, very briefly. I grew up as a classical musician, as a violinist at a little music school called the Yehudi Menuhin School, which is nestled in some beautiful countryside just outside London. It's actually now just down the road for those football fans where Chelsea Football Club train. So a little place called Cobham. But back then there was just a donkey where Chelsea used to train. And my father was my headmaster. He ran the school. It was a kind of elite environment with children from all over the world. And Yehudi Menuhin, the founder, was a real visionary. And in fact, as part of that, we had students from India. So we went to India. And I fell in love with India. And so when I left school, I started my travels. And I was very much on a spiritual quest, very much governed by that question, who is Ben? And part of that time took me to India. I remember in particular one trip to Dharamsala to see the Dalai Lama, et cetera. So it's been very present for me. And the way that over many years I've come to articulate my own personal sense of purpose in terms of truth, what's true, what is real. So I think who is Ben Renshaw? At the heart of that is a discovery for truth. What I found over the years, I don't define that, but and then that plays out, you know, as a father, what's true for my kids, as an exec coach, what is true for my clients, as a member of society, you know, what is true in a very, very conflicted world.
Wow. So the search for Ben Renshaw and the discovery continues from what I'm gathering.
Every day.
Brilliant, brilliant. So there's a lot to unpack there, and I'm going to go back a little bit. You talked about being in music school, starting there, and traveling around the world, especially India as well. So how did you then transition into the corporate world? How did you get into doing leadership development, coaching? What was that?
Yeah, thank you. All the major transitions for me have been very much led by people through relationship, and in particular mentors. And so what actually happened was, so I realized when I left the music school that the music profession was not for me. And it was actually a family member that had been very interested in psychology, but much more of a therapeutic lens. So that's where I started. I landed up in America, trained with this private institute there, came back to the UK. It just so happened that a colleague of mine, we actually set up, this is why I love the name of your podcast, Shiny Happy People, because we actually set up something called the Happiness Project on the back of our National Health Service in the mid-90s. So I actually started work, and this was a time where we were looking at positive psychology and well-being. It was very early days. We were doing a lot of work with health practitioners and different charitable organizations. Out of that work, and we got a lot of media attention, and then we started getting invitations into organizations. And I started with British Telecom in the mid-90s doing management development. I had no idea what I was doing. I then got into...
What year was this, Ben? What year was this?
It was around 95, 96.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. So, sorry, keep going. I wanted to ask, I'll come back to the year. Yeah.
And then out of that, I was very fortunate to be invited onto the faculty of a coaching program in a big, in fact, it was a defense aerospace organization, and we were developing the top 750 engineers as coaches, well, leaders as coaches. I fell in love with coaching. And coaching for me, that experience then was really the first time that I discovered, encountered a methodology and a philosophy and a way, an approach, a way of working with individuals that completely resonated with me. In other words, very much recognizing that people have answers within them. And as a coach, you're obviously there to facilitate and unlock people's potential for the discovery of that. I was very fortunate that the master coach on that was a remarkable individual called Graham Alexander, who was the grandfather of business coaching in Europe. He became my mentor. Right. We wrote a book together, Super Coaching, in 2005. And that was kind of, you know, that took me into a whole other world then of corporate executive coaching and development.
Wow. Wow, wow, wow. So amazing journey. And you know, it's definitely... some of the people that you work with, the mentors that you mentioned, I'm sensing are really critical in your journey. But the reason I interrupted you earlier when you were talking about the Happiness Project, isn't it funny? I'm sure you probably thought of it, how in 95 you were talking about happiness, wellness, all of that, and come back to 2023 and mental well-being, happiness, positivity, it's all back front and center. It's like the you know, bell bottoms and the white ties that keep coming back every once in a while.
Absolutely. I mean, look, I think that, you know, for me, and I'll give you an example, very interesting. Last week, I actually got introduced to, and again, this is back to people and connections. I got introduced to a remarkable professor, a lady called Dr. Victoria Hirth, who is a fellow at something known as the Sustainability Institute for Leadership at Cambridge University. And she got commissioned by the UK government to write the very first national set of standards for purpose-driven organizations. And their definition of purpose essentially is long-term well-being for all people and planet. And you know, so again, 30 years later, I get introduced to a professor who's actually now written the recommended standards, the governance for a purpose-driven organization. I've been peddling purpose for over 20 years in companies. However, only now are organizations actually institutionalizing purpose as part of their governance and held accountable for what does that mean, what does that look like, and how do you build a purpose-driven organization?
So in essence, you were too early for the day, or people were just tone deaf to listen to all of this. It was always there, but people weren't willing to listen to it. So what do you think has created the environment where people now in the last decade or so are listening to purpose-driven organizations, or the whole focus on it is so high?
Yeah, I mean, look, I genuinely believe that COVID and the experience of COVID has probably accelerated what we're looking at now by, I don't know, 5-10 years. I think that, and look, this is only my own humble observation. I think that, you know, in the 90s, 2000s, there's a massive, massive focus on, you know, success and consumption and money and materialism and acquisition, all of that, which is great. It's great to have stuff. Yeah, at least you can arrive at your problems in style. You know, if you've got a lot of money, brilliant. However, I think what we've also recognized with that, it's not an answer, you know, to long-term well-being and fulfillment and sustainability. So I think COVID, really, and the impact of that on people, on their mental health, on their well-being, and the recognition that things like community and relationship are absolutely fundamental, you know, for our well-being alongside, you know, money and status and all the rest of it. That is one area. I think then in terms of the environment, and without a doubt, the environmental crisis, which we still, you know, continue to wake up to, but it's absolutely, you know, it is the forefront of every organization I work with. Yeah, you know, is what is your sustainability agenda, often dressed up as ESG, but primarily it's a very broad agenda. You know, not just the planet, but also people, because, you know, it's all very well to have big, hairy, audacious goals for companies, but if you haven't got the people in it, you know, the right level and the right capability to deliver, then, you know, then you're in trouble. I think the third bit is technology. And again, I think that with the advancement of a digitalized age, AI, all the rest of it, it throws up really existential questions for people about, you know, why we're here, what's the point, what does it look like? And, you know, so I think these are really significant trends that then have a big impact on people asking the question, why?
Yeah, no, you're right. And so the pandemic was like an accelerant. The conversation was there. You just brought it forefront. And I like what you said about it. It's all about the people. It's not just the employees, though, but it's even your consumers, your customers. If there's no clients to buy your product, then it makes no sense. There's got to be a sustainable economy out there for everything to happen. So, and then you decided to go in and start writing books. And one of your latest books is about how to be a CEO. So can you tell us a little bit about the genesis of that?
Yeah. No, again, thank you for asking. So before I get into that, just, you know, writing's been a remarkable journey for me. So growing up as a musician, part of the reason I chose to focus on music was I was not a big fan of academia. So, you know, my father, he's an academic. He's an educationalist, PhD, professor, all that good stuff. So I grew up in that environment. But again, that wasn't really my home. But what falling into the world of personal development, what that did do for me was completely activate my curiosity. So I'm an absolute lifelong learner every day. So when you ask the question, who's Ben? You know, every day there'll be a variation of that. But at the heart of that is my learning. And I write to learn. So what writing does, it's an incredible discipline because it challenges you to think. Well, you take a topic and you go, well, what do you think? And what happened was, because I've been coaching CEOs for a long time, I've always been fascinated by the role, the challenges, the journey to becoming a CEO. And I thought, I need to go deeper into this topic. I need to really, really understand how to be a CEO. So I know that, number one, there's no better way for me learning about something to write about it. Number two, I don't know how to be a CEO. I've never been a CEO, but I know a lot of CEOs and I coach a lot of CEOs. So then the next logical question was, ask CEOs. So the book is a synthesis of over 35 interviews primarily with CEOs, but also then I really wanted to test and verify their thinking. So I'm very fortunate to be connected with a fantastic professor, Amy Edmondson at Harvard Business School. She's the originator of psychological safety. So I was able to kind of calibrate my insight there. But I also thought I'm going to choose C-suite leaders as well, just, you know, CFO, CIO, chief people officer, chief commercial officer, chief technology officers. Again, just because it's being a CEO is within a context, and also chairman as well, just to really understand that. So the book is a synthesis of their insight. It's based on three principles: purpose, people, performance. One of the big learnings I've had coaching leaders is the rule of three. So I only think and operate in three. Nobody can handle more than three. So I discipline myself. So the book is three principles and seven steps to being a CEO.
Nice. We're going to go a little bit deeper. We don't want to give too much of the book away because we want people to buy the book, right? But a question there, have you from, you know, having coached CEOs over the course of several decades and to where they are today, have you talked about or seen some trends, like how are CEOs managing, because the pandemic definitely challenged them a lot, and it really held a lot of the CEOs' feet to the fire. But what do you think is, from 20 years ago, a CEO 20 years ago to a CEO today, what are one or two things that have significantly changed?
Look, I mean, there's number one is governance. I mean, the governance that CEOs have to handle today is... It's the right thing to do, but it's extreme. It is a lot. And that is only going to continue. I mean, just take sustainability. Reporting on sustainability is a machine. I mean, I'm talking primarily for public limited companies that have that level of accountability. So I would say governance is major. Back to the issues that we were talking earlier, sustainability, you know, I mean, that 20 years ago, that wasn't really on the agenda. Now it's number one. People, ED&I, equity, diversity, inclusion, absolutely number one on the agenda for CEOs. Well-being and mental health, again, you know, that is absolutely vital. I think what never goes away is performance and delivery and strategy. One of my favorite frameworks that came out of the book, a fantastic CEO. Actually, he just moved on, but Keith Barr, former CEO of Intercontinental Hotels Group, IHG, many years. But when I ask him, what's the role of a CEO? Four things: strategy, capability, talent, and culture. So for him, it's all about strategy, set the direction, capability, which is the organizational machine. So have the right organizational capability, which includes the structure, the OD, talent, right people, right roles, succession, all of that, and then culture. Have the right environment and conditions for people to thrive.
Mm. Yeah, no, that's a really simple framework of the four that they're looking at. But coming back to your earlier comment on what's changed, so I'm sensing that the performance or delivering, that's a given now. Every CEO is, that's like almost hygiene, right? But the number of eyes on the CEO from a governance perspective, from a social perspective, from a sustainable perspective, everybody is watching them. And to be fair, I know you said it's mostly for listed companies. I would guess that even for the privately held companies, the CEOs are being watched by their stakeholders, by their customers, because everyone wants to do business with companies that are doing the right thing. So I don't think they get a free pass.
No, there are no free passes today. Absolutely.
You're listening to the Shiny Happy People podcast with Vinay Kumar. Subscribe to us on your favorite podcast platform. This podcast is sponsored by C2C OD, your organizational development consulting partner, bringing people and strategy together. Follow us on LinkedIn, Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook using the handle @C2COD, and get updates on our upcoming episodes.
You know, your book talks a little bit about how to be a CEO. So is it, who's your target audience? Is it people who are aspiring to be middle management, want to, you know, get a jump start on it? What was your thinking about?
I'm not a big commercial animal, so I don't think, oh, here's my, you know, target audience, I'm going to write for them. I write for me. And then look, if other people are interested, that's great. Having said that, the book is positioned with three audiences in mind. You know, so absolutely, as you say, those aspiring to be a CEO. So, and, you know, because there is no CEO school. It became very clear in writing the book, every CEO said, it doesn't matter, you know, how many business schools, how much training and development you do, there is nothing can equip you. Nothing can ultimately equip you for when you take the office of CEO. So I think that's aspiring. Those as CEOs, I think it's a good book to look at and reflect upon, well, here's the views of many other CEOs. Where do I sit? What's my point of view? Have I got a clear construct? What does that look like? As I said, that example with Keith Barr, four big topics, areas of CEO, it's really helpful to have. And then thirdly, those helping others to become CEOs, coaches, mentors, you know, even within organizations in terms of, you know, the people agenda. I think, again, it's just provocative to have another framework to hold up in terms of looking at succession and talent.
Yeah. Thank you for that. And that's a really good way of framing. I like the second audience profile that you said, existing CEOs, they've got there, and I'm guessing a lot of them, and part of your coaching work is, okay, I'm here. Now what do I do? This is bigger.
Have I covered all bases? Because there's a lot, you know, I mean, in the book, again, back to the rule of three, you know, I've got seven steps. Each step is broken into three ideas. So basically, there's 21 ideas for a CEO to really consider as a result of the book.
So I want to come back to you because the genesis of the book is from your conversations and coaching a lot of the CEOs. What are some of the, you know, top two or three? I'm sure, I don't know if you have a number of how many CEOs or CXOs you've coached in your career, but I'm guessing there's some common themes of challenges that you encounter. What would be those top two or three or four themes that you have encountered in your coaching practice?
So look, I think in terms of the top two or three themes that CEOs are really challenged by, number one is engagement. In order to create a great place to work, you need engagement. And engagement for me translates as trust.
Yeah.
And is, you know, you can measure trusts. Neuroscientists show that, you know, we've got oxytocin, you can measure oxytocin levels. So I think that always, because you can have a great strategy, you know, you can have great propositions, great products, systems, technology, all of that. If you haven't got the great people and the great conditions in order to deliver, you will fail. So number one challenge, without a doubt, is people and engagement. I think then number two, I would suggest the other, another big challenge is on the back of that, of engagement, is then high-performing teams, getting people to work together across functions in collaborative ways. Because, yeah, most of the organizations I work with, they're global. Even if they're not global, they are matrixed. And even if they've got, you know, really hard reporting lines and they're very functionally set up, the only way they're going to succeed is together as a collective. The interdependence today absolutely demand levels of awareness and understanding in order to drive collaboration. That is massively challenging for CEOs everywhere. Then I think the third one is the balance, and it's a very, very fine line between delivering today and planning tomorrow. You know, most CEOs, I mean, they are, it's a very, very, very short-term focus.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it's almost like, well,
they've got to hit the numbers for the year. Right.
Absolutely. Or even for the quarter, I mean, sometimes it can literally be definitely for the year, but even sometimes for the quarter. And then at the same time, you know, they are being asked to build a sustainable organization, which is very, very future focused. Some organizations I work with, they're gearing up for 2050. You know, they set targets, particularly like, you know, environmental targets. They have no idea, you know, carbon neutral 2030. 2050. No idea how they're going to do it, but they have to do it. It's the right thing to do. So I think that tension between delivering today and planning tomorrow, it would be the third one.
Yeah, and sometimes they're creating those long-term targets for even beyond when they're going to be CEO. Many of them would have left, right? And it's the legacy that they're going to leave behind at that level, because there's no... After CEO, what are you going to do? Chairman, and then you're pretty much done. So you've got to be able to do that. But what's interesting, and I don't know if you sort of noticed, two of those three are very, very internal focused. Teams and engagement, very internal. And profit motive, balance sheet, execution, all of that's a given. It wasn't even in that list.
Yeah. Now, I mean, look, obviously the... You know, the balance sheet and the profit and the numbers. I think it's just a given. And if you're not delivering, you're fired. So, you know, it's very black and white. But for me, it's all about the way you deliver, because the enablers for delivery are high engagement and high performing teams.
Right. Absolutely true. So you were talking about that when you write books, it's also part of your own learning process, and you want to be an agile learner. So what's something you discovered writing this book? What surprised you writing this book?
Look, I'm a little biased on this. So I absolutely admit my own preferences, because I'm wired. My wiring is to purpose. My wiring is to people. Now, I love performance and I love results and all of that, but first and foremost, purpose and people. So I think probably the big surprise learning, but also validation, was without a doubt that what absolutely came through from all my conversations was the power of purpose. That every CEO would say, you know, if you haven't got they would define it a little differently, but essentially, if you haven't got a very, very clear motive as to why, that's clearly articulated, that people understand, that provides direction, decision-making lens, it actually provides governance for an organization. I mean, that's the point of purpose. Ultimately, it provides an organizational context which is grounded in why you're here, whether that be for colleague, for consumer, for customer, for the community, for all constituents, it provides that direction. So that would be number one. And then number two, as we've just talked about in terms of the importance of people, and that would be, in some organizations, that's translated as humanity. As a big retailer I work for, their core value is be human. And if I just give you another example, you know, coaching, actually not a CEO, but a very, very, you know, senior leader during COVID. Now, he's in transportation. So they're absolutely at the front line. They needed to keep delivering the service, but it was very, very challenging conditions. They have operating costs of $600 million a month, so they're fixed costs. They lost their income. They're partly government funded, so it's a very political agenda. And this leader every day showed up, and his focus and his messaging was to lead with humanity. Right. Lead with, which meant a level of care, compassion, understanding, flexibility, to really understand people's personal requirements and needs. And he has absolutely retained that. And he has built, and his premise is about creating the conditions for high trust. Mm. So again, that would just be an example of bringing it to life.
So is that CEO you just mentioned in the retailer and the focus they're doing, that's amazing. And that is that still an exception, or is that becoming a norm that more and more CEOs are thinking of it? The reason I ask is during the pandemic, the caring CEO got, I mean, every CEO became the caring CEO and they were all on speed or steroids or whatever you want to call it, right? It was the need of the hour. And it was the way to engage, keep people concerned, you know, all of that. Would it be accurate to say that post the pandemic, as we are now coming on this side, that some of that is waning? They're going back to the, and what should have been the norm is fast becoming an exception. That's just my perspective. I'd love to.
In my experience, it's definitely not becoming an exception. I mean, there's no question that obviously coming out of the pandemic, you know, number one was profit, and number one priority was survival for a lot of organizations. Right. So totally get that, and I totally appreciate it. But I'll give you an example. You know, I work a lot with Heathrow Airport. So they're our national airport. Yeah. And, yeah, again, they were ravaged by the pandemic. They lost billions. But they've really ramped up. Now, I'm very fortunate. I coach the director of security, so they run operations. And their number one focus is obviously safety, but it's all about the passenger experience. Now, in order to deliver that passenger experience, because they know that in order to hit their metrics, it's about the passenger and the customer service. So even though you're dealing in a highly regulated, compliant environment where it's all about efficiencies and productivity and cost and money, you know, they are the engine that makes money for the organization. They do it in a human way. So I think what I would say is I see that, yes, I agree. In the pandemic, it lent towards greater compassion. Coming out, I think people are... But what I'm noticing as examples is organizations... I was speaking with this with the CEO recently, actually in Canada, where, because a lot of organizations have been very challenged with, you know, going return to work policies and hybrid work, yeah, flexible working and all of that. And they have retained a flexible environment where other organizations just went, boom, back to office 5 days a week, non-negotiable, or you're fired. And actually, people have been voting with their feet in terms of that. So that was a little short-sighted. So I think organizations that came back too fast in terms of implementing actions which were not perceived as caring, there's been a backlash.
Yeah. No, I'm glad to hear that it's not an exception and that there's still more and more out there. But to your example that you just gave, even the fact that they could think that, you know what, let's go back to normal, let's get everybody back, let's mandate people coming back to the office, and having to put employees in a position that they have to vote with their feet, you sort of start wondering, didn't you think this through? What didn't you talk to the people and gauge the sense that they're... Sometimes they just go back to a react mode, right? It's a shame. So coming back to the book, what would you... So one is, you talked about everyone's going to have a framework. You talked about the 21 actions. But what would you like a reader to get out of the book?
Look, I think ultimately, I think with any book, I'd like them to go on a journey for themselves where they get to reflect upon where they are, where they want to be, and what does that mean for them. And so that might mean, for some, it might really cement their aspiration to be a CEO and go, fantastic, I can do this, and I'm going to really look at, you know, fulfilling my potential on that journey. For others, it may absolutely crystallize, you know, that actually that is not a route, but actually what it does enable them to do is to have a lot more reconciliation in terms of where they are and actually reframe, you know, their own sense of ambition and drive and what that means and looks like. So I think ultimately for me, look, I'm in the kind of potential business. That's what... yeah, really, really energizes me is what is your potential and what does that look like? So if the book helps people to have greater discovery and meaning of that for themselves, then that's fantastic.
Mm. On a lighter note, do you think somebody is going to read that book and say, I wanted to be CEO, but after reading this, that's a lot of work. Maybe I don't want to be a CEO.
Yeah, great.
Which is a good thing, right?
Good thing. 100%. Look, it's one of the toughest assignments on the planet, and nobody wants to be led by a CEO that doesn't want to be a CEO.
Yes.
You know, so facing that, you've got to look in the mirror and ask yourself, do you really, really, really want this role? Because it will probably take up virtually everything.
Yes. There's a lot. There's a reason why they say it's lonely at the top.
Oh, yeah.
So what's next? Now this book is out. What's next for Ben?
Well, look, it's a good question. I mean, my curiosity never stops. I actually had the meeting last week I mentioned earlier with this university professor who specializes in purpose and governance. So we're in an early discussion about potentially to collaborate on the next book. So my writing, that never stops. And then I think now, what's great about the book for me is because it's not my voice. I mean, genuinely, it is a synthesis of insight and learning and lessons from a collection of leaders I have huge respect for. So I actually feel quite liberated. Like, don't take my word for it. I'm not here to convince you about how to be a CEO. But look, here is the tangible evidence from absolute track record, evidence-based CEOs that have either, you know, grown big companies, they've done turnarounds, they've been there, they've been hugely challenged regionally, globally. So I think for me, it's about using that now to help people discover where they are and what is their truth, which takes me back to my own sense of purpose.
That is excellent, and as you discover your sense of purpose, and you know, one of the things that I was thinking of when I read the synopsis of your book, How to Be a CEO, I was wondering, is there a book that says how not to be CEO or how to not be the CEO that no one likes, right? Or is struggling, and it's almost your book is the way to do it, and everything that's not there because of all the stories and the synthesis is you do all of this. There is no magic formula for it, but at least it points you in the right direction. So as an author and as you're learning stuff, what do you do to stay up to date? We have a section called RWL, read, watch, listen. What do you tend to read, watch, or listen to?
Yeah. Great question. I mean, look, there's a mix of things. So I love Diary of a CEO podcast, Stephen Butler. So that I keep pretty up to date with that and think his, you know, what he's developed there is phenomenal. I think it's a fantastic resource. And, you know, his book, How to Be a Diary of a CEO's book, that was an interesting read. I then always keep abreast through Harvard Business Review. That for me gives me a kind of good snapshot of what's going on. And then more in depth, because of my connection with the Harvard professor, Amy Edmondson. So, for instance, her latest book, The Right Kind of Wrong, that's a provocative, challenging read. So those are some resources. But I just keep abreast because of the curiosity. I probably get most of my insight through conversation and through others. So always asking, always curious, what's going on? What's the translation of that? What does that mean and look like? So that probably keeps me very much up to speed. And again, because I work across a whole plethora of organizations and sectors, it's whether it be retail, aviation, transportation, construction, legal, finance, on and on. It gives me a very good read, a very good pulse. And I work globally because, again, I think that's essential to have a good appreciation of, you know, the Americas versus Asia versus Europe versus the UK, you know, everywhere there's slightly different focus areas.
Yeah, definitely helps with the whole intercultural and the cross-cultural piece as well. And with all of that information, it gives you a good macro level view of what's going on out there as well. So that's great. So Ben, this has been an awesome conversation, and you know, we are, as you know, called the Shiny Happy People podcast. So what's your, I know learning is one of the big pieces for you that keeps you going, but what are your secrets for positivity, staying motivated? How do you keep yourself happy?
Look, great question. There are a few things. So number one is friendship and community. So that I really invest in my friendships, and I have a variety of friendships. So I play tennis, squash. I've just gotten into paddle, which is now my favorite new game. So I've got a bunch of friends that really support me there, and that's a lot of fun. One of whom is my son. So like yesterday, I got to play paddle with my son Ziggy, who's 17, and his friends. That is, you know, there's nothing better than that for me. Humor is critical for me. So I actually start the day with humor. So I'm a huge fan of an old sitcom called Seinfeld with Jerry Seinfeld. Oh, yes. And yeah. So when I'm doing my morning stretches, I actually have Seinfeld on in the background, which literally, it just sets the tone for the day. And I think the third bit in terms of positivity genuinely is my work. I mean, I feel very blessed that I love what I do. And actually, every conversation, whether it's a conversation like this and meeting yourself through to my clients, it genuinely fires me up. I mean, I am more energized and more fired now. I'm more positive now than when we started, than when we met half an hour ago. And that, I'm fortunate to have that during a day.
That is brilliant, man. That is great. And same here. I really, really enjoyed the conversation. So thank you, Ben. I've taken a lot of your time. Really appreciate you being on the podcast. You have a good one, and look forward to staying in touch.
Thank you.
Thanks, Ben. Take care. Okay, folks. So that was an interesting conversation with Ben, the author of the book, How to Be a CEO. I do like the fact that the book is really a synthesis of all the conversations he's had. And it makes me want to pick up a copy of it, understand. And I love the examples that he gave. The other thing that stood out for me is when I asked him the question about, do you think CEOs are going back to the way it used to be and forgetting some of the lessons of the pandemic? I do like the fact that he said a lot of them are not, and that's a positive factor for sure. Anyway, it makes me want to pick up a copy of the book and read it. I hope you also got some great insights and will go out there and get a copy of his book. Hope you enjoyed this conversation. More such interesting guests and conversations coming up soon. With that, stay safe, folks, and stay tuned, and it's over and out.